Hello there and welcome. Today is Thursday, April 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, almost all 100 senators get briefed on the threat posed by North Korea.
It's clear that Kim Jong-un intends to develop both nuclear weapons and the capability to deliver them against the American mainland.
The White House unveils a tax plan it calls the biggest in U.S. history. Strong words from President Trump over a new federal court setback. Also ahead, an update on the untimely death of a popular American actress. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, lawmakers from both the Senate and the House of Representatives received an extraordinary classified briefing by the administration Wednesday. Those attending were able to ask questions of the president's national security team and learn about the broad range of options to remove the threat from North Korea, which a senior administration official also described as very grave, posed by the brutal and unpredictable Kim Jong-un regime. Most of the 100 senators gathered in an auditorium of the executive office building adjacent to the White House. Chris Coons, a Democrat from Delaware, says no specific actions against North Korea were discussed.
I was reassured that the Trump administration, Secretary Tillerson and others, are consulting all of our allies in the region and China to reduce the likelihood of a miscalculation and misunderstanding. Given the unpredictability of the North Korean regime, though, this is certainly an unsettling situation.
VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman talked about it with Jim Stevenson about this unusual meeting.
This meeting was also attended briefly by the president. He was there for about 15 minutes, and the senators heard from the Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, the Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunford. Now, one of the senators, a member of the Foreign Relations Committee, Chris Coons, after he came out of it, he told reporters here at the White House that it was a sobering briefing, and it was clear just how much thought and planning is going into military options, if that's called for, and also a diplomatic strategy, which he said struck him as clear-eyed and well-proportioned to the threat. And before two of the briefers subsequently headed to Capitol Hill for a similar discussion, which with the 431 current House members, there was a statement issued by Tillerson and Coates warning that the United States remains prepared to defend ourselves and our allies if diplomacy fails to de-escalate North Korea's pursuit of weapons of mass destruction.
Were the senators reassured by the Trump administration's actions so far?
Well, we've only heard directly from one of them so far, but Chris Coons did seem to think that they have things under control and that a lot of thought is going into this. Now, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, earlier said that it was the unpredictability of North Korea that prompted him to ask the president to have his national security team brief the full Senate on North Korea, and that, according to McConnell, the president has made clear that having North Korea with a nuclear missile capable of crossing the Pacific is going to be unacceptable.
President Trump has moved a carrier strike group into the region. A nuclear-powered submarine has now arrived in South Korea, and the THAAD missile defense system is being deployed.
Right. Yes, obviously the timeline being escalated for that missile defense system and moving the carrier strike force up there meant to dissuade North Korea from doing anything. There had been concerns that the North Koreans would set off a nuclear, a sixth nuclear test right around now, or perhaps another ballistic missile test launch to mark one of their key anniversary dates. All they did was set off a bunch of artillery, about 300 large caliber self-propelled guns firing in unison on the shore instead of doing anything more provocative.
Well, in a repeat and often heard rhetoric, North Korea's foreign ministry is issuing a fresh warning that, quote, in case a war breaks out on the peninsula, the U.S. will be held wholly accountable for causing trouble after bringing lots of strategic assets and special warfare means That's a quote. North Korea's official news agency characterized the current joint drills underway between the U.S. and South Korean navies as a prelude to an invasion. Donald Trump has said that Chinese President Xi Jinping is applying pressure on North Korea to not engage in further provocations. Here are some of the stories that we are following at VOAnews.com. President Trump may pull the U.S. out of the North American Free Trade Agreement. Somali pirates gets a life sentence for an attack on a U.S. naval ship. Donald Trump's cuts to U.S. refugee program leads to 300-plus layoffs. And American college campuses increasingly hostile to free speech. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, having failed to repeal Obamacare, President Donald Trump is tackling another major campaign promise, reforming the federal tax system. Reviled by many Americans as hopelessly complex, needlessly burdensome, and a drag on the economy. Administration plan to overhaul the tax code was rolled out on Wednesday. As VOA's Michael Bowman reports, while nearly everyone supports the concept of similar or simpler, fairer taxes, getting a reform package through Congress could be a challenge.
Thousands of pages long, the federal tax code is the butt of many jokes, as demonstrated by comedians Jimmy Fallon and Ellen DeGeneres.
Thank you, Tax Day, for combining the fun of doing paperwork with the threat of going to jail.
Thank you so much. I love that applause. I wish I could keep it all, but the government takes 35% of that.
President Trump summed up his tax plan this way.
It will be a big, big cut.
Trump's point man on tax reform laid out the parameters.
Middle-income tax cut, a priority of the president's. Simplification. The average American should be able to do their taxes on a large postcard. Business tax reform. We need to make business taxes competitive.
Republican congressional leaders say tax changes should not increase the federal deficit. History shows Republican tax plans favor the wealthy and worsen America's finances, say Democrats.
If he wants to pass a big tax cut to make the rich richer at the expense of working and middle-class families, the answer is no.
Their tax legislation is a Trojan horse to come up with new tax breaks for the most fortunate.
While reducing tax rates, Republicans aim to scale back a multitude of tax breaks that benefit everyone from home mortgage holders to charity donors. While those tax changes would make the tax code less complex, they would trigger strong opposition from powerful interest groups. Republicans are undeterred, promising major benefits.
We'll see millions of new high-paying jobs. We'll see wages rising all over this country. I think that's what the American people want and expect us to be doing.
But some economists warn of potential pitfalls.
However, U.S. fiscal policy still seems likely to turn more expansionary over the next couple of years. The result could be inflation and a faster-than-expected pace of interest rate rises.
Republican divisions on repealing Obamacare could resurface on tax reform.
There's some pretty big divides in that Republican Party, and that spells trouble. So this is going to be a rocky road ahead for Republicans, even though they control all of Washington.
It's been more than 30 years since the last major U.S. tax overhaul, enacted at a time when partisanship in Washington was far less pronounced than it is today. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Well, the White House has sharply criticized a U.S. federal judge's ruling blocking a directive from Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, to withhold funding from sanctuary jurisdictions, those that limit their cooperation with U.S. immigration agents. Joining me now for more understanding of this is California appellate attorney Ben Foyer, who argues Supreme Court cases. Thank you so much for being with us. So first of all, explain to us, what is a sanctuary city?
Generally speaking, these are municipalities or other state entities that direct their law enforcement officers not to go out of their way
and in fact sometimes, in some cases, not to at all, comply with federal immigration-related requests from federal immigration authorities. So, for example, this is what when this most often comes up is where a local police officer will arrest somebody for some crime that person may have committed or be alleged to have committed, and will or believe that this person may somehow have come into the United States unlawfully. It's a city that has adopted a regulation that prohibits, instructs local law enforcement not to comply with the requests if they're made by immigration agents, or to seek out immigration-related proceedings for individuals they may arrest for other reasons.
The government threatened not to fund these cities if they continued that practice. That was struck down. Explain exactly what the judge's reasoning was for striking this down.
The executive order in question instructed the Attorney General not to provide funding or to do everything within his power to limit federal funding to areas that have adopted these regulations preventing immigration enforcement through the use of local police officers and local officers. Essentially, areas that weren't cooperating with the federal government's new policy. The instruction in the executive order was to find ways within the limits of the law to prevent these areas from receiving federal funding. And this is a huge amount of money for many municipal and regional areas.
But what was this federal funding for?
It applies to a broad array of services that counties provide.
It's not specifically for immigration issues?
It has nothing to do with immigration.
So what you're saying, the funding that was threatened to be withheld had nothing to do with the reason it was being withheld?
That's exactly right. And that was one of the major issues that eventually found this executive order unconstitutional had with the order.
If you had to sum up why the judge ruled the way he did, what would you say?
I'd say there were really two major problems with this executive order that made it really constitutionally very, very problematic from the start. First, the executive order, by purporting to withdraw federal funds, all federal funds, on the basis of noncompliance with this one immigration law, violated one of the Supreme Court's rules that says you can't take away so much federal money that it's going to cripple a state or a municipality in order to accomplish your federal goal. That violates the state's sovereignty, ultimately. The second major obvious problem with the executive order had to do with state sovereignty and the concept of commandeering. That is, the federal government cannot come in and tell the states how they have to operate their own agents, their own police officers. Instead, it has to ask, because the states and the federal government are co-equal sovereign. So I think those are really the two biggest, most obvious, glaring flaws.
The president says he is planning on taking this to the U.S. Supreme Court. We don't know if that will actually happen. He has said that before and not done that. What do you think would happen if he did?
Well, the first step would be for him to take it to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And I think that probably, frankly, at each level, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and even the U.S. Supreme Court, even with the president's newly appointed Justice Neil Gorsuch, that this executive order is very constitutionally problematic, and that the chances of its survival, at least under the existing precedents that the Supreme Court has sort of long established and accepted, is very questionable. It's a very dubious order. The fact that the Justice Department was going out of its way to argue that this executive order doesn't really do anything on its own, I think indicates just how constitutionally weak the Justice Department lawyers knew this order was, and that probably the purpose of signing this order has more to do with keeping campaign promises, getting the political points that would come with it for certain members of the president's base, than it does with having a very likely impact on the way funding is actually going to occur.
That's Ben Foyer, chair of the California Appellate Law Group. We appreciate your perspective. Thanks for being with us. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
on the next Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss the latest political developments in Zambia. Will President Edgar Lungu declare a state of emergency after public buildings were torched in attacks? He blames the violence on opposition members protesting the arrest of their leader, Hakainde Hichilema. An in-depth discussion on Zambia on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues now with entertainment news. Well, we learned this week of the death of actress Erin Moran, the former child star who was in 1974 cast in Happy Days as Joni, the kid sister to Ron Howard's Richie Cunningham in the sitcom, and later with Scott Baio in Happy Days spinoff Joni Loves Chachi. So we really haven't heard much about the cause of her death at the age of 56. We did know that she endured numerous struggles in recent years. Joining me now with an update is Rare.us content editor Nicole Moschella. Nicole, thanks for being with us. What have you learned?
So she was found unresponsive in her home that she shared with her husband and mother-in-law in Indiana on Saturday and was later pronounced dead. And she had somewhat of a troubled past early on in her life. And so early speculation was it a drug overdose? Did drugs and alcohol have something to do with that? So her Joni Loves Chachi co-star Scott Baio kind of heard these rumors. And he did an interview on Monday where he some pretty inflammatory remarks about her and her alleged drug use in the past. And basically he said, if you do drugs and you drink, you are going to die, when he was talking about her death. Mm. And shortly after he made those statements, it came out that she actually had secretly been battling stage 4 cancer. Mm. So he had to come back and kind of say he was sorry about that and he didn't know she was sick. Many of their Happy Days co-stars didn't know that she was sick either. Henry Winkler made nice condolences to her, but made no mention of her being sick. Her on-air TV brother, Ron Howard, also did an interview where he said he had no idea she was sick. So this was very sudden for her family and many of her past co-workers, colleagues, cast members, that kind of thing.
Very sad, for sure. And I know we have another celebrity that's had some health issues. I hope he's okay. Elton John?
Yeah, Elton John gave everybody a little bit of a scare recently. He had to cancel some tour dates in late April and early May after he was in the ICU for a rare and potentially deadly infection. There's no word on what the infection actually was, what he was diagnosed with. But he must be feeling a little bit better because he was able to tweet to fans and say that he woke up the next morning after the news came out and was flooded with get well soon messages and thoughts and prayers. And he's looking forward to being back on tour soon.
All right, great. Good to hear. Rare.us content editor Nicole Moschella, thanks for being with us. Turning now to what's trending on social media. For that, we're joined by Andrew Palchewski. Hi, Andrew. What's happening?
Two trending stories, one rather sad and one rather bizarre. So first, the sad one. Simon the Rabbit passed away on a United Airlines flight between Chicago and London. It was going from London to Chicago. Now, this rabbit, 3-foot-long rabbit, a giant rabbit, was in the cargo hold of United Airlines flight when it died. People are aghast that United Airlines is having another PR snafu this rabbit die in the cargo hold.
Right. But then there's... What happened?
Unclear. Not clear what caused his death yet, but social media is outraged, claiming animal cruelty, taking aim at United yet again. So not what United wanted.
No.
But there are some jokes about the fact that it was traveling from London to Chicago's airport, which is called Chicago O'Hare Airport. So some jokes about that being to O'Hare and a rabbit.
Right.
some jokes being made, but people are very upset about this as well, and they're hoping to get answers. United looks like is going to have another PR snafu that they're going to have to deal with the death of Simon,
this giant. What else?
This other bizarre story, department store Nordstrom is selling a pair of pants for $425, a pair of jeans. Now, that in and of itself isn't necessarily remarkable. Nordstrom is a high-end retailer. The issue with these jeans that people have seized on is that they appear as though they are caked in mud. And so they're selling
on purpose?
On purpose. Mm-hmm. That's the way they're designed. And so they're selling these apparently what appear to be mud-caked jeans, even though it's just the design. For $425. So
to wear a pair of jeans that look like you fell in the mud?
Exactly. And so there's a lot of talk on social media about who exactly would buy these pair of jeans and wear them.
I was thinking the same thing.
Especially when you can buy a pair of jeans for, I don't know, maybe $15 at a discount retailer and then go roll in the mud in them and probably have more fun.
If you so choose, yes.
Yeah, and have more fun and spend $410 less than you would for these. So a lot of jokes about the rich wanting to look like the common folk and people getting swindled into buying jeans that you could get at a work site. A lot of questions about this on social media. So no word yet if Nordstrom's has addressed this, if they're planning on pulling the jeans, but it is just a bizarre piece of clothing. This happens from time to time. We see on social media there are these bizarre pieces of clothing.
That's one of the weirder ones I've heard about.
Yeah, there was one recently, one retailer that had a pair of jeans that were made of like clear plastic. That was getting a lot of social media attention recently. You'd obviously have to wear something underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
It happens from time to time. You have a piece of clothing that looks like something you could pull out of a bargain bin or even a Goodwill store. And yet it's going for hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. So this is the case this week with Nordstrom and these dirty jeans. No word yet if anyone's actually purchased them and worn them. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's the next step to this. If we start seeing photos on social media of somebody out in the wild, out in public, wearing these dirty jeans.
Why? I'm sorry. I don't get this one.
Yeah, that's generally the sentiment on social media. People really don't understand this. Again, when you could buy something much cheaper and have a lot more fun dirtying it up yourself.
I can think of a lot of things to do with $425, but buy a pair of jeans that look like you rolled in the mud with fake mud? I don't know.
No.
All right, to each his own. Thanks so much, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter, at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Well, a hot dance rock band has a new single, and VOA's Border Crossings host, Larry London, joins International Edition's Sarah Williams to tell us all about it.
Today, we're talking dance. Actually, what we're talking is DNCE, so they left the A out. It is a band that was put together by former Jonas brother, Joe Jonas. And they've had a few hits, and I'm sure you probably heard Cake by the Ocean. They followed that up with Toothbrush, and now they're back with a brand new song. They're currently on tour promoting their debut album, which came out last year. It's called DNCE. But the new one features Nicki Minaj, and the song is called Kissing Strangers. It just came out, so we're going to listen to it right now.
Is this a new partnership with Nicki Minaj? Have they worked together before?
No, they haven't worked together. They have their own band. It's a foursome. Joe Jonas is the guy that put the group together. Actually, Joe was primarily the lead singer of the Jonas Brothers, along with his brothers Kevin and Nick. Then they broke up beginning of last year and went in separate directions. DNCE released a song, probably tongue-in-cheek because they didn't have an album at that time, called Cake by the Ocean. But the song hit top of the charts, sold millions, and everybody took them seriously. So they decided, well, you know, we better put out an album. So they have recorded a full studio album. They're touring for it right now. And when Joe is not busy doing touring and singing, he's been hired as the body, the face, the spokesperson for the Guess underwear line. So he said it's been a lot of hard work for him getting his body in shape for underwear ads, but he doesn't mind that at all. But this group is kind of an international group because it features a Korean guitarist whose name is Jinju Lee, and she's very talented. She's been a part of other groups and been a session recording guitarist for other groups as well. Very talented. So I really like their sound. They're an upbeat, happy, you know, up-tempo kind of group, DNCE. And the new song is great, but this is their first collaboration with another singer. DNC have won many awards. Most recently, they won a Teen Choice Award for the best party song. They've won some MTV awards in Europe and here in the U.S. as well. Nominated for People's Choice Awards this year. So very popular. We better take them seriously. DNCE.
Okay. And what are the other Jonas Brothers up to?
Great question. Nick has kind of been laying low. He released his first album last year called Last Year Was Complicated. He had a number of hits off the album, Closer, and several other songs as well. Kevin got out of the music business. Kevin is taking care of his babies at home. He's got a couple of young ones with his wife, and they've done a reality TV show. But he's not really in the music business right now. So Nick is, and Joe is with DNCE.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I'm kissing strangers.
You've been listening to International Edition here on VOA. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States-Japan alliance is the cornerstone of peace, prosperity, and freedom in the Asia-Pacific, said Vice President Mike Pence on his recent visit there. Under President Donald Trump, the United States stands unwavering in our alliance and unyielding in our resolve to defend all that we have built together over these generations. The United States will strengthen its presence in the Asia-Pacific, said Mr. Pence. Japan will assume a larger role and responsibility in our alliance in the years ahead, and both of our nations will continue to expand our cooperation for our common defense. Together, said Mr. Pence, we will defend the rules-based order upon which the region's progress, past and future, depends. We will protect the freedom of navigation and overflight and other lawful uses of the sea, in the South China Sea and elsewhere. And we will ensure the unimpeded flow of lawful commerce on the seven seas. Even now, there are storm clouds gathering in the region as regards North Korea's pursuit of nuclear weapons. It is the most dangerous and urgent threat to peace and security of the Asia-Pacific, said Mr. Pence. For more than two decades, the United States and its allies have worked to peacefully dismantle North Korea's nuclear program and alleviate the suffering of its people. But at every step of the way, North Korea answered these overtures with willful deception, with broken promises, and nuclear and missile tests. As President Trump has made clear, the era of strategic patience is over. The United States will continue to work diligently with Japan, our allies across the region, China, and the wider world to bring economic and diplomatic pressure to bear on the regime in North Korea. And we will do so until they abandon their nuclear and ballistic missile programs, said Vice President Pence. In the meantime, all options are on the table. And those who would challenge American resolve, said Mr. Pence, should know that the U.S. will defeat any attack and meet any use of conventional or nuclear weapons with an overwhelming and effective American response. The United States of America will always seek peace, but under President Trump, the shield stands guard and the sword stands ready.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.